Socrates, the only true wisdom consists in knowing that you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Sun comes up and rises high. It's so hot, it's gonna make me cry. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Welcome to episode number 13 of the Modern Masculinity Project. Thanks for downloading this episode, and thanks to those of you supporting me and these other guys each week. My name is Brad Pankey. I am the host of this podcast. In each episode, I sit down with other men for open, vulnerable, and sometimes challenging conversations on a wide range of topics, with the goal of kind of normalizing the idea that men should be sharing how they feel openly, and that sharing emotions is a sign of strength. I'm looking to discover the critical moments in a man's life that we consider turning points, you know, those moments that contribute the most to how we define ourselves as men today. And selfishly, doing this allows me to engage in deeper conversations, which I like. With that said, I hope we all, men, women, non-binary folks, can find something in these conversations that resonate. Who knows? Maybe we can learn something by simply listening to one another. Pretty novel concept. If you have not done so already, please subscribe and rate to the podcast on iTunes. Tell your friends, your significant other, your grandma, all the people in your life. That'd be great. We'd love to hear from them. You can reach me on twitter.com at mmprojectpod. And via email, mmprojectpod@gmail.com. Ladies, you can send me your questions for What Women Wonder at either of those spots. All right, let's get on with the conversation, shall we? My guest today is Derek Hamilton. I connected with Derek through a mutual friend, the lovely Lauren Gaucher, who was one of my inspirations to start this podcast. She posted on Facebook that I was starting the podcast, and Derek made a comment that he was interested in taking a listen or whatever, which was good enough for me to invite him on. but you know, in the time between him expressing interest in the show and him coming on, I learned two important things about Derek. One, he's a runner, obviously. And two, he's Scottish. Now, it's obvious, you know, why me learning that he was a runner is important, right? I'm a runner. Knew it'd be easy for me to connect with him on that. But Scottish? The hell does that mean, right? Well, what does that have to do with anything? And it's pretty simple for me. There are some accents that make me happy when I hear them. I have no idea why, and it may be silly, but it's just me. Okay? It just makes me happy when I hear a Scottish accent. And it also kind of made me miss my Scottish buddy back in London. Mark, if you're listening, miss you, buddy. You know, Mark taught me the wonders of Scottish slang. You know, miss you, buddy, you old Bob Ag. Anyways, back to Derek. After several months, I finally got Derek scheduled to come into the apartment for a conversation. I knew the conversation would be good, but I was secretly hoping that he would bring a thick Scottish accent, just because it brings me so much joy. So the day came for us to talk, the Saturday afternoon, I think it was, and Derek texts me that he's downstairs waiting. At this point, I'm really only thinking about whether or not he's going to have a Scottish accent. You know, this anticipation is building in my head, and I kind of skip down the stairs from my second floor apartment with curiosity, and I arrive in the lobby, and what do I see? It's Derek. Wearing a kilt. I was just hoping for an accent. He brought a kilt. We talk a little bit about that, but, and of course, you know, as he greets me, Scottish accent, that just brought me so much joy in that moment. But, you know, Derek is more than his Scottish heritage. He's more than this accent. He's more than what he, you know, appears to be, as we all are. But he's an incredibly thoughtful, kind man who seems to be stoked on life. And Derek and I talked about running, identities, calling out other men, and a lot more. And I hope you all enjoy this conversation as much as I did. So, without further delay, here is episode number 13 of the Modern Masculinity Project What's Under That Kilt with Derek Hamilton.
I rush fast like the rapid river, a rough and heavy steady flow. The rock stopped me for a moment, but I weave above and bend below. I eat what is fed me, I can cause a deadly blow. And still the river flows, only heaven knows where the two winds flow.
Joining, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I feel like I was thinking about this. I feel like I have a bit of an advantage here.
Yeah,
because like I've probably listened to like 6 or 7. Oh, cool. Podcasts.
Well, thanks.
Like from the start, so I've not caught up yet. Yeah. But so I feel like I kind of know you already.
Yeah, good.
Well, yeah,
it's always I've had a couple people say that to me, and it's always, I don't know why, it's a little surprising.
Yeah,
they're just like, oh, people are like, I feel like we're really getting to know you. I'm like, oh. That's
yeah,
cool.
So it's like, I feel like there's a real, like, because we've never met, right?
Yeah, never met.
So, I feel like I know a lot about you.
That's
already
cool.
Which is awesome.
That's cool. We chatted on Facebook a little bit.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, well, just that, but that was so brief. Thing I saw, you know, obviously you did that ultra.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about, but then I was like, oh, you're from the UK somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And then, so when I heard you, I was hoping you would have an accent.
Okay.
Because when I lived in London, I just always got a kick out of it and like taking the piss with people. And it was a lot of fun being over there. So,
yeah, the UK is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. We like our sarcasm over there.
Yeah. It's different. it's quite a bit different. Just even the language. I mean, they would say stuff to me. I'm like, I know that's English, but the way that you're putting those English words together, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, especially like I think my accent has kind of like softened a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, definitely. In fact, I know I've softened a lot the way I say a lot of things, because I learned that people couldn't understand me.
Oh, okay.
And so I feel like I speak the same, but when I go home, my family and friends really notice it for the first few days.
I'm a little American boy going over there.
Well,
now.
not quite, but yeah.
No, yeah, that's cool. And what brought you over here?
It was a job.
Okay.
Yeah, I was, so I'm a mechanical engineer, and I was working for a firm in Glasgow, in Scotland. And then I moved to one of their offices in England, and I was developing some products for them. And they saw that, or they thought there was going to be a market in America. And one day I was in the like kind of staff canteen area having lunch, and I looked up on the notice board, and there's this thing saying, hey, we're going to explore the American market, and we're inviting applications for people who want to go out there and like do that for us.
Yeah.
And I just read that and immediately knew I was going to get that job. So like, I took it down off the notice board and photocopied it, and I took it home, and I was living with my girlfriend at the time, and I said, look at this, it's amazing. And her reaction was just like, oh no, I don't want to do that.
Oh shit.
And like, I think at that point, like we broke up eventually, but I think I knew, cause I was so sure I was going to do it. So anyway, I, like did based in the UK. I did a lot of travel back and forth, and eventually we decided to send me out to the West Coast.
Yeah. Had you been out here before?
Like I'd been to America once in my life.
Where?
Like Chicago, kind of around the Illinois area.
But quite a bit different.
Yeah, it was for a work trip.
Yeah.
And then I started exploring a bit, and eventually moved to San Francisco, first of all.
Okay, nice.
Lived there for like 2 years.
Yeah, I like it down there.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. But then moved to Portland, and I just love it here.
Fell in love, right?
Yeah.
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 Of course, I'm biased, and I love it here too. I think it's one of the best cities on earth, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've lived in South Korea, lived in London, lived in Paris, and I was actually just talking about this with a coworker, where you just kind of mentioned it in passing that like Portland is a place that you can truly be whoever you want to be. Like if you want to be like this me with this long flowing hair, you can be that, and people are like, "Cool, you do you."
Yeah,
and just that's it.
Yeah,
there's no making you feel other.
Yeah, that is very, very accepting.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, people say Portland's weird and keep Portland weird and stuff like that. And there's a lot of weird stuff going on.
Oh, sure.
But it just feels kind of normal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The weird feels normal.
Yeah, it's like I was arranging to meet some friends a couple of weeks ago, and they just said, look, we're in an Uber and we're stuck because of the naked bike ride. And they're like, there's thousands and thousands of people naked riding bikes. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, yes.
That makes sense.
You're like, yeah.
We'll catch you another time.
Yeah. Enjoy the naked bike ride.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a spectacle.
Sure. And then, so what was your, what was kind of your sense between, you know, you said you're from Glasgow?
Yeah.
Well, between that and Portland, like, what's the...
You know, they're really similar.
Really?
So Glasgow's of a similar size. It's of a similar size, like a million people.
Okay.
Glasgow's kind of like, it was an industrial city, mm-hmm. kind of built up around, there was like the steel industry and a really large shipbuilding industry. And then after the decline of that, there was like a lot of redevelopment that went on. But now there's like this awesome waterfront and lots of areas of the city have been redeveloped.
Yeah.
And it's like a pretty hip place to live.
Oh, nice.
In certain parts. Mm-hmm. But equally, it's quite spread out. Mm-hmm. And there are some like areas of kind of poverty still.
Sure.
But it's the people are so friendly. And this is true across Scotland.
Okay.
People are really, really friendly.
Yeah.
And there's just like a nice kind of vibe about the place.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel the same kind of thing in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And also like, so if you know the geography of Europe, so mm-hmm. Scotland's kind of that northwest edge of Europe.
Yep.
So we get all the weather coming off the Atlantic and it's really wet.
Yeah.
And actually Glasgow gets more rainfall than Portland. Fun fact.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So,
but spread out over probably 10 months. Oh yeah.
It just doesn't really, it's just a constant drizzle, right?
Yeah, it can be. And so like Portland is like Glasgow with an awesome summer.
Okay.
Weather wise.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'll take it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I was in London, there's always a stigma. Oh, London has terrible weather. But I was like, when I lived there, it rained and I'm like literally 1-2 days.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
This is nothing.
It can be great.
This is nothing. It was good. And I'm sure it gets worse than that. But
yeah,
times I'm just like, you guys are weak.
Yeah.
Quit your bitching. Like, this is great here. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. London's a cool city.
It's cool. It's just like, what is it? 8 million people or something.
Yeah.
But it's intense.
Sprawling.
It's sprawling. And I mean, I was living 4 miles from city center and it's still like dense.
Yeah, and like I've never really done it, but I imagine cycling's not really that safe.
Yeah, so I did.
Yeah.
I cycled from where I lived down into city center, and I mean I didn't get hit by a car.
Okay.
I've been hit by a car here several times, but like but I didn't feel safe, certainly. First of all, it was on the opposite side of the road than what we ride on here.
True.
But like that was one of those things where it didn't take me. I never made a mistake, like we're, oh shit, wrong side of the road.
Yeah.
No, you feel so, you're on edge so much, you're like, I can't make a mistake. So that wasn't hard.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that scared the hell out of me wasn't really cars, it was other cyclists.
Really?
Because they just go flying by you, weaving in and out of cars, just flying. And I'm just like, I'm good with going like 12 miles an hour, dude, you do you. But you know, and I tried to use the tube.
Yeah.
But I hated it.
Really?
It's dirty and polluted and crowded and hot. And
yeah.
So I ended up biking a little bit, but even then I'm just like, God, I don't want to bike through all that.
Yeah. And it's pollution as well. It's a fairly polluted
city. It's fair. I mean, it's just 8 million people.
Yeah.
You just can't avoid it. So many cars on the road. So, but it was super cool.
You were there for a year?
How long was I in London? Close to a year in London.
What took you there?
I graduated from the University of Oregon with my MBA in sports marketing. And my goal all along was kind of, I wanted to go to Europe.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to make that work. No idea. I know it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to get a visa.
Yeah, I know that coming the other way.
Yeah, especially coming the other way, probably. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know how, but I'll just wait. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't get the degree to just settle for something. that I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, however long it takes, that's cool. So, you know, I graduated in June 2015, and I applied. I mean, I was applying to jobs here, too, just in case something killer would come along.
Yeah.
Because I'm always trying to be open-minded to different experiences, but I really wanted to go to Europe. So June 2015, I graduate, and you're like, you're already hitting the ground running with applying, like back in May before you graduate. Uh-huh. So I'm applying, and it wasn't until finally November that I found this little job. It was technically an internship.
Wow.
With this little French startup company.
Okay.
And I'm like, fuck it. Like, yeah. I'll just apply to that.
Yeah.
I don't care. Like, I've always used work as a way to gain experiences through life rather mm-hmm. than being like my life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't really see myself as a career person, but it's a work can be a cool way to live mm-hmm. if you can live through it. So like, well, I don't care. I'll spend some money for a while if I need to and just try it out and see how it goes. And I applied, and eventually it's like, well, we have to actually turn this into a full-time job. And they're like, oh, okay, sure.
And this was based in Portland?
No, this was based in Paris.
Oh, wow. Okay,
yeah, so right. Based in Paris with the intention to move it to London.
Okay.
I'm like, well, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be in Europe and be able to travel for super cheap and go, you know, see all this stuff while I'm working and in the running industry and just meeting cool people. I'm like, yeah. Look, let's go. So took months to get the visa situation settled, and I was going mm-hmm. back and forth, and eventually just found my way to Paris. And all of a sudden, like one morning I wake up and going to work in Paris.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Talking about big cities.
Paris is
huge.
Paris is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite thing to do there was simply wake up on Saturday, go to the bakery early, get my bread, mm-hmm. walk back through the farmer's market, get my cheese and vegetables, mm-hmm. eat like this amazing, like late breakfast number 2/lunch number 1.
Yeah.
And then just go walk through the city. Just no plans. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's just such a beautiful city.
It really is. And very walkable actually, like between all the kind of big attractions.
Yep. Yep. I mean, so from where I was kind of like top right corner of Paris. And then, so it would have been a very long walk for me to like walk to the Eiffel Tower on the other side, but I did do it. Like I'd take the metro halfway across one day and then just walk the rest of the day, but very walkable. And like some of the most beautiful things, they're just random buildings.
Yeah. Yeah. Stunning.
So had you spent much time there?
Not a ton of time. Yeah. I did like a 5-year, degree, mm-hmm. which the third year of that, so it was in Glasgow, and the third year of that degree I did an exchange in the south of France.
Yeah.
So I went to engineering school down there, and we went to Paris a few times. Yeah. And I visited like as a tourist as well, but yeah, I like it.
It's yeah, nice. Those big cities are cool, but I was just thinking about this recently too, and I get kind of not bummed out, but I'm like, they're just, I love how diverse they are. Like I love it. That's what one thing I'm like kind of about Portland. I'm like, oh, okay,
yeah,
not a ton of diversity here, which I'm kind of like, all right, cool city, I love the people, it's my home state, I'm like, whatever.
Yeah,
but there's not a lot of diversity, but these other cities are.
Oh yeah.
But at the same time, like, you don't get like, I don't know if I've seen like true French culture. You know,
What would that look like?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think really it's, for me, true French culture would be like small town.
Right.
Kind of based around like the, you know, the bakery and the, like there's the farmer's market and stuff. And there's like some kind of cottage industry there. Yeah. And that for me seems like kind of French culture.
Yeah. And I guess the point I'm getting at there too is a little bit like all these big cities kind of start to feel the same.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look. People in London, like Londoners, Parisians, they're very different people.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm saying. They're very different people. Uh-huh. I think you know that too, but it's just the way of life can feel the very similar. Big city is a big city.
Yeah. Yeah. They do start to blend together, especially Western cities.
Yeah.
You can just go anywhere and it maybe the architecture is different, the language is different, but they can yeah. begin to feel the same.
Except for, yeah, you think you made a good point about Western, because South Korea didn't feel like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I was outside of Seoul in a town of, what was it? They called it a small town. It was 640,000 people.
Wow.
Because Seoul has, what, 19 million or something? Oof. It's one of the most populated cities on Earth.
Wow.
And it was intense.
Yeah.
But it still felt, it's just like an alien world. Because they live so differently.
Yeah.
But it's rad. Have you ever been to Asia at all?
A little bit. Work took me out there, yeah. actually. So I was based in Hong Kong for, it was like a short time, 5 or 6 mm-hmm. weeks. And we were traveling to like Singapore and Japan. Trying to like get some business.
Yeah.
But I was like a young guy. Yeah. I was like, oh, this was 10 years ago. So I was like 25, 26.
Yeah.
And, I get sent out there, to kind of shadow someone. And I was just felt so out of my depth.
Yeah.
You know, I was like 3 years out of college and suddenly like in a meeting in Tokyo and just thought, what am I doing here? Like I gave a presentation and there was like a translator translating it to all these Japanese people. And I'm like, why am I even here?
Sure.
How did this happen?
How lost did you feel?
You know,
and just in general, I mean, just like a feeling of like, oh, I'm just way over my skis.
Kind of like that. I think that has cropped up a lot throughout my working life mm-hmm. as I've found myself in situations where I'm in a room full of people who look like they know a lot more than I do. Certainly they're all 30 years older than me and I'm telling them something.
Yeah.
And that just feels weird.
Oh, I think we all have yeah. that little bit feeling of imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah. Oh, big time. I get it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me like, have you always had that or is that something you've developed?
You know, it's funny. I've got this weird situation where I think I'm quite confident
yeah.
and I come across as quite confident, but I also off I think I felt it all the time.
Yeah
It's kind of like, you know, just thinking career wise it's, you know, go through as my career's progressed, I've always had this feeling like it's only at some point they're going to find out I don't really know what I'm
sure.
doing. Like, when are they going to figure this out?
Yeah.
But like, no, they just like give me something even more crazy to do.
Yeah.
And still I'm like, how's this happening?
Yeah. I get that feeling.
Yeah.
That same exact feeling. How old are you?
36.
Okay, I'm 31. So that far apart, but it's just, I think it's always been there too a little bit. And yeah. I wouldn't say I've been like the most confident human ever born, but I've always just been like, maybe it's because some things have just seemed easier to me or just seemed like, oh, I thought that everybody knew that.
Yeah.
So it didn't make me feel like I should be more confident that I know something.
Yeah.
Or that I have this good idea or yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, I just thought don't we all know that?
Yeah. I mean,
you're going to find out that like these are very simple things and I'm not anything special.
Yeah.
Like this idea is cool, I guess, but like you probably had the same idea. You just didn't know it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot to be said for, I think everyone's got something to bring to the table.
Yeah.
But also just kind of being humble as well. And I'm always wary of people that like talk too much.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I forget what there's probably a quote out there, but it's like, if you talk too much, then you know, you're not listening to other people and that's how you learn. You know, so I'm a big fan of listening to what other people have to say because you learn new stuff.
Well, not only that too, but yes, big time just listening is so huge.
Yeah.
It's so huge. And I find that when people are talking a lot, they're actually saying very little. People who make it a habit of just saying more words to try to explain something and just keep adding more words. Like, well, it's because you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You're not really saying anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're just trying to add more words to get somewhere, and it's making it worse.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying being quiet or anything is, like, the best thing or the way I do it's the best way, but, like, I agree where it's, like, I'm a little skeptical of this person who's just talking a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of, like, the smartest people I know, and I'm thinking of, there's one colleague in particular, like, if someone asks him a question, he doesn't feel the need to respond straight away.
Right.
He'll like just take those few seconds to think about it. And I think that's a sign of like, there's some sort of quiet confidence there.
You know? So you take it that way, right? A quiet confidence. But I mean, I've had some experiences where I try to do the same thing sometimes, because not only sometimes I'll get a question or something and it's like, maybe it can be annoying or feel annoying, or maybe it can feel, it's like, oh God, I have to answer this question.
There's like a trigger.
Something, but I've tried to build in like this stop before you say anything, gather yourself.
Yeah.
Like, okay, figure out what you're going to say.
Yeah.
But sometimes, and if I'm just sitting there, like if you ask me a question and there's that little pause, it can be taken as confidence, but also taken as like kind of like a condescending, like, are you going to say something? Or okay. Like, yeah. So yeah.
People aren't comfortable with that.
Yeah. People aren't comfortable without, they just want words back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can fill it in. Like some people are very good at,
I'm not good at that part. Yeah. I'm not good at the fill in part. Yet. Yeah. Where so I guess I could go,
you're asking me that.
Yeah. I guess you could like repeat the question and go, yeah, that's a really good question.
Yeah, perfect. You know what I mean? That's a really good question.
It's a really good question. You know,
I might use that today if you ask me something hard.
I know, that's a really good question. I don't know. I like to, with this though, I find that if you just, I don't remember where I heard it, but just letting the silence work a lot of the time for people. Mm-hmm. If you ask them a hard question, it's just like, why are you going to mess up silence? And their train of thought, they're going to come with something that's interesting.
Totally.
Do you find differences in that confidence maybe between, so you felt like you had this kind of this quiet confidence, right? Do you feel like, do you observe any difference between people in Scotland and people in the US?
You know, there's definitely a stereotype. So in the UK and in Europe and, let's just say in the UK, our image of an American is the ones that come visit.
Yeah.
Or the ones we see in TV. Yeah. Because we watch a lot of American TV and obviously movies, a lot of them are made in the States. But yeah, the image of the Americans that come visit is they're kind of loud, kind of obnoxious, kind of demanding.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm not sure if that's answering the question, but that's the first thing that comes to mind.
No, I get that 100%. Like, yeah. I know when I would go over there, I'm a pretty quiet person.
Yeah.
Like, I just, especially when I travel, I don't really say a peep until I get comfortable because, to be honest, I really don't, and this isn't because I'm not proud to be American, I don't want people to know I'm American.
Okay.
Because.
Why?
Because I know it'll automatically make me stand out.
Okay.
I just don't want to stand out. I'm here to be a part of this culture.
Uh-huh.
I'm here to learn.
Yeah.
And I don't want Americans are known all over the world, right?
Mm.
Just in general. Mm-hmm. We're loud as a country. We're into shit all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And like everybody knows about Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if I couldn't tell you about people from the Czech Republic. Well, I've been there, but like, I don't have a stereotype of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, they're just beer. Existing. Yeah. They like beer. Okay. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Drink a Pilsner.
Yeah.
But like, you know, American has this very, it's like America. It's American. You know?
Oh, it's trucks and guns. And
in all of it.
Yeah.
All of it. So I don't want that put on me, I guess. Yeah. So I just stay quiet. But it kind of like surprised a lot of people when I was there.
Really?
Like, oh, you're American. You don't fit the, first of all,
yeah,
like I'm skinny dude, right? A lot of people were like, oh, all Americans are fat, they're loud, and so I'm like, well, you're somewhat accurate, but, you know. So.
It's a kind of unfortunate stereotype because, you know, I've traveled a fair bit and lived in a few different places, and there are awesome people everywhere.
Oh, everywhere.
Like, absolutely everywhere. You just have to find them.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes the hard part.
Yeah.
Especially moving somewhere new.
And I think you said it earlier, is just... How do you do that? Well, you just maybe shut up and listen.
Yeah.
And see what's going on around you. Don't make too much noise for the first bit. see who's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So I don't know.
It's funny. You're saying that when you go to Europe, you try and like conceal the fact that you're American to begin with. Yeah. Whereas for me, like coming here, I think it's awesome being Scottish.
Yeah, it is.
People love it. To it. And it's funny because so many people, when they hear that, will say, "Oh yeah, I'm Scottish too."
Oh, really?
But what they mean by Scottish is that they were, I don't know, maybe their great grandparents were Scottish, but they still hold that identity.
See, so this was just a recent thing that I saw with the French World Cup team.
Yeah.
Did you see what happened with this?
Well, I saw the response from Trevor Noah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. And I have a French friend who didn't like that response.
Oh.
Because, and I was trying to understand both responses. Because it's, I don't live on any extreme. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? I just, the answers invariably always lies back in the middle somewhere. Mm. It's just, I don't know, with some things.
Like, yeah.
let's be reasonable. But, you know, he was making the point where it's like, these guys feel French. They're French. Mm-hmm. They grew up in France. They're French. Yeah. We accept them as French. They're French.
It's the only language they speak.
It's the only language they speak. It's the only world they've known. They're French.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yep, get that.
Uh-huh.
100%. And then on the other hand, Trevor Noah's response was, they are French, but they're black too. And we can celebrate them being black.
Mm.
Because he was coming at it from a mindset of America, an American, where it's like, we love celebrating our heritage, our ancestry, even though like we've lived, like the person you just said, you're like, you're Scottish? It's like, well, yeah, my grandparents are from there, but we love to celebrate it.
Mm-hmm.
Or just the thing that you, what was the thing you went to today?
I was out in Gresham at the Highland Games.
Yeah.
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 Just great.
Didn't even know that thing existed here.
There were hundreds of people there wearing kilts. And,
yeah. You're wearing one right now. It's cool. I love it. Like, it's just all of it's cool. And I was trying to explain, so in America, that is the difference a little bit where we are such a young country.
Yeah.
We're a collection of people from everywhere in the world. And we like to celebrate those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily right or wrong, and it's not right or wrong to not celebrate it as much, but it's like both groups are talking about the same thing, just using different language.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're just seeing it from a different point of view.
Well, the thing I took from the whole French and African French, if you want to call it that, question, I think what Trevor Noah was saying was that they're French when they win the World Cup, but they're African when they're committing crime or something else.
Yeah.
So there's like, you know, you kind of pick and choose what suits you at the time, like for your agenda.
Yeah.
And I think that's dangerous.
Yeah, that's very dangerous.
Yeah.
He made that point where it's like the guy that climbed the building to save the baby. It's like that French guy climbed the building to save the baby.
Yeah.
But he's like, but if he drops the baby, all of a sudden that black guy dropped the baby.
Yeah.
It's like super dangerous to... Yeah, I mean,
it's something that, you know, all around the world, people are grappling with the same kind of problems, and it's the same kind of thing that's happening in America too.
Yeah, I think, you know, and it's a good segue just to talking about even with the men's issues with women right now, or just the language that we're using is problematic, or the way that we're addressing it is problematic. We just seem to. Like I definitely think there needs to be some sort of course correction, right?
Mm.
Men have been getting away with so much shit for a long time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I'm always a firm believer. It can't be all men that are doing these things. It's just, I'm not doing it. Mm. I don't feel threatened by women. Like, oh cool. Women are getting some power.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
But I don't feel threatened or angry by it. But, you know, you go into Twitter or Facebook or something and you're like, Jesus, like, just crucifying everybody,
who,
even for comments. I mean, even for comments.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Or there's a funny meme that pops up and people are like, oh, look at this guy. And it's like, yeah. Well, wait a minute. Like, let's go look at that a little bit further. Oh, uh-huh. It was a joke. Okay.
Yeah. Or people getting fired now because of tweets they made 10 years ago.
James Gunn.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah. I've not read them. I have a Twitter account, but I don't.
Like, they're not funny. I mean, they're jokes, but they're not funny.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just like, they were just like shock value jokes.
Yeah.
And the guy that got him fired, I don't even want to say the guy's name because he's just a right-wing crazy person, has actually like literally been accused of rape.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. So, but yeah, James Gunn got fired for like super inappropriate, like pedophilia tweets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That happened 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I guess at the time he had apologized for and like already took shit for back then. Uh-huh. So it's like he served his time, as they say. And
yeah,
like, okay, they were bad jokes, but
now it's coming back.
But now he got fired from Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. Disney fired him.
Yeah.
And so that's the sort of thing where I'm saying, okay, maybe that's like, just that reaction in general, it's like, well, maybe that's a little too far.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think the point, to go back to the point you made before, you're saying kind of like the work that needs done.
Yeah.
And I think even I also consider myself someone who's not like a perpetrator of some of the, like, the shit that's causing all of this.
Yeah.
But I do think as a society, we, you know, even the language we use, for example, the term you guys.
Yeah.
I never really thought of that as problematic. But then I was watching something the other day where a musician was on stage and he said this last song, you know, kind of goes out there to all the women because, you know, he was just acknowledging their struggle and kind of the song was about like, how he really wants and values the perspective of a woman, something like that. Anyway, so as he was introducing it and he said, blah, 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 and you guys, blah, 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 and then just checked himself. He's like, sorry, I didn't mean to say you guys. And it was just so...
Yeah.
But it just rolls off the tongue.
It does. Because
it's in such common usage.
Yep.
And that's the kind of thing that's hard to...
Hard to get rid of.
To undo, get rid of, yeah.
My undergraduate degree is in exercise science, but I also started out as a PE teacher.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, and one of the things they teach in education school is to not say that. At least the school that I went to.
Yeah.
Specifically. Just don't say you guys when you're addressing a classroom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time, it's like, okay, seems simple enough, you know? So you just say folks.
Folks.
Or y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah, you all, y'all, that's okay too.
Yeah.
I say folks a lot. It kind of sounds a little like, to me, it kind of sounds corny sometimes.
Yeah.
When I was like, yeah, it kind of sounds.
I catch myself saying you guys.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
But I notice it. And I notice that it's probably not the best phrase.
Yeah, probably not. Because they're literally not guys.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what we get caught up in is just not acknowledging them as women, people, you know, acknowledging women being in the room. I don't know how that feels to it. Like if somebody came, okay, ladies, and I was sitting there, I'd probably be like, oh, are you not talking to me? If I was in the room, if you turn it around, you know what I mean?
It sounds ridiculous.
Yeah. It sounds ridiculous.
Hey, girls.
Yeah.
I'd be offended.
I know. Right.
Yeah. But we just expect.
We just expect it.
Yeah. A question for you. So you're in sports marketing, right? What's the kind of gender balance of your industry?
So industry wide, mostly male.
Yeah,
mostly male.
That's.
And now when I say mostly, I just mean definitely more than 50%. Probably, okay. I would, if I had to guess, more than 60.
Okay.
However, I work in a very unique office.
Okay.
Where it's mostly female.
Great.
And the energy is way different in there. Mm-hmm. It can be very loving at times, very energetic and very creative and just very like, it's just a different feel, less, you know how when you get around guys sometimes, or it's just kind of like, who's this guy? Like a little less side-eye-y, You're not like sizing each other up. Day. Yeah, I just made that up, but it's just like,
it works.
You know what I mean? Mm. So
there's a competitive edge.
Yeah, there's always a competitive edge with guys.
Mm.
And whether or not it's just sometimes we like to compete with each other. We might love it, like we could love each other and high five at the end of the day, but sometimes we just like to compete with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started, I was almost the only guy in the office.
Wow.
So it's a really unique situation.
Great.
But mostly in the sports industry, it's a lot of dude sweat.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know there's a bunch of Scottish guys actually that work for Adidas.
Yeah, sure.
In Portland. And it just seems that I've not met many women that work for Adidas. But yeah. I'm sure there are many.
There are. I mean, sure. Yeah. I know. Well, you see. Like, I have that one friend. Yeah, I know two people. Right, so it's like, but right. It's a huge company.
Oh, it's massive.
It's massive.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason I brought that up is because, you know, I've been working in this industry where it's like you go to a conference and there's say there's 1,500 people there and 98% of them are old, rich, white guys.
Oh, yeah, that's...
And I just really noticed that. I mean... I have a lot of privilege as well. I'm like white, male, straight, educated.
Right? I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you in that. I'll share that privilege with that you. Stuff. Yeah.
English speaking.
Yeah.
Some people might argue that.
Yeah. Well, the but, Queen's English.
Yeah. But, you know, there's just something about like when you're in a room full of all the same type of person and they're all, I don't know, there's something that I don't like about that complete lack of diversity.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
Yeah.
I don't like it either. Because just, you know, having worked with, you know, not only gender, diversity in gender, but diversity in ethnicity, like everyone has such a unique perspective on everything just based on those simple biological things,
mm-hmm.
just what they've experienced growing up, how people treat them. It just creates different perspectives on things.
Yeah.
And the best ideas, I don't know about you, but, you know, I work on a marketing team, so best ideas always come from a collection of ideas.
Yeah.
Never one person.
Oh, definitely.
Or one perspective. So if you get two straight white guys or a bunch of rich old white guys, they're all going to pretty much have the same experiences and same perspective.
Yeah. Oh, it's true. I mean, a lot of what I've experienced is a whole industry of people that know how to do it. And they know what works well and they know what's worked in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very, and there's some momentum there.
Right.
And it's kind of sown within this whole industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to get them to look at something differently.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like they know what has worked to now. They know what works now. That's also may not be the best way to move forward.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And they're like, well, we've done it this way forever.
Yeah.
We're just going to keep doing it this way because that's the way it's been done.
And I'm retiring in 5 years. Yeah. So I'm definitely not going to start looking at something new.
Yeah.
Because I'm too old for that.
That's a good point.
And you know what's interesting about this conversation is we're not even talking about what the subject matter is. But I think in general, I think that's probably true in a lot of industries.
Oh yeah.
Like the...
Yeah, I would think you can apply that to anything.
Yeah, and I caught myself there. I was about to say the old guys know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But the old people.
Yeah, I know. It's, man, it's ingrained in everything.
It really is.
It's crazy. I don't know.
Yeah. I found myself, you know, just on the work subject, I found myself in situations where these industry peers have, you know, I find them being inappropriate. And I'm thinking of an example. I was at a conference down in California a month or so ago. And I was walking along with this guy that I know. He's been a customer and a competitor and various things. But we were walking along and there was a woman standing there. And as we walked past, he made like a really inappropriate comment about, I'm pretty sure he gave her like a mark out of 10 type thing.
Yeah.
And I was just inside, I was just like, I need to tell him this is wrong.
Yeah.
but I didn't.
Yeah.
Because he's like, you know, he's like 30 years older than me,
sure.
and has this position of responsibility in this organization, and I didn't say anything.
Mm.
And I've noticed that a few times where things are going on.
Yeah.
And I've really wanted to say something and haven't.
What do you think the block was there?
I don't know. Just like... I don't know. I think as a person, I really like to avoid conflict in general.
Yeah.
I kind of get the same feeling.
I don't want conflict. Yeah. I don't like it.
I like to avoid conflict, but there's also like a... I don't know, just in a professional setting.
Sure.
Is it okay to call people out?
Right.
Is there's that okay?
And it seems like for you too, where you feel like you feel like you've seen an injustice.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're like, well, this is a weird setting to see an injustice. Am I supposed to say something here?
Mm-hmm.
Should I? I mean, the injustice is not good, and it's important to address it. But it's like, what do I do here?
Yeah.
And I've experienced the same exact thing almost. Where you're kind of at work, but not really at work. You're in a work with work people in a bar setting or something. And, you know, people are drinking and doing things, but you're looking and you're like, I don't drink a lot at all. So I was sober during this time. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, he's getting pretty handsy.
Oh, yeah.
But she's like, but I'm also observing her. I'm like, well, I know that that's not a thing. I'm like, what am I supposed to do here? Do I say something to my friend? Like, or do I just go get her? Like, do I say something to him?
Yeah.
Because obviously it's like, shouldn't be happening. And I know she wouldn't want that to happen.
Yeah. And do you think in that situation that...
And I didn't, just to,
yeah.
I'm with you, I'm sharing this, yeah. like, I didn't, I did the same thing as you, and I didn't do anything.
And so is this a friend who wouldn't speak out in the moment,
or you don't think
she had the power to speak out?
And that's the hard thing, because in the moment, it's like, it looks like they're having fun.
Yeah.
But I know, but then there's also the dynamic of, like, it wasn't like superior and inferior type. Like,
yeah,
as far as job thing goes, but it was still like, I still don't know the dynamic that's at play there. Where is she just doing that because she's uncomfortable to do anything else?
Yeah, you know, I've
heard... like so much going through my head there.
Yeah.
I'm like, and then I end up doing nothing.
which I get.
Yeah,
I get it. The thought I had was I've heard so many women talking about experiences, especially when they were younger.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm like mid-30s. A lot of my friends are, you know, of a similar age, and they'll talk about... So there was the whole Me Too movement, and that brought up a lot of conversations about sexual assault.
Yep.
And so many women, really pretty much all of them, have told me of situations where something inappropriate was happening, but they were just frozen with fear or something and unable to respond. Like, so maybe in their head they're thinking, this isn't right, this feels uncomfortable, but they can't, for some reason there's a block and they can't say anything. And I just wonder, you know, what do you do if you see something happening?
Okay, like the first thing, like, just there's like systems of everything, right? We talk about people. Sometimes I've had to explain like what systematic racism is. I've had to talk about what systems are. So we have these systems built into cultures, right, that create something.
Yeah.
Like, systematic racism means that the system was built by racist people and is therefore going to have elements of racism in it.
Yeah.
Same thing, what you just said, I'm not comparing it to racism, just systems, is that I wonder how much of that freezing is systematically built in to how we treat women growing up. Do you know what I mean? Like, is there this, are they being taught in a way, or grown up in a way, to be feeble or whatever, or submissive, where it's just like, it's not their fault that they're being taught that way. It's society's fault for like not giving women, not empowering women.
Yeah.
And so they grew up like that, and they get to an adult, and then they're in this situation, and all of a sudden now they've been taught, because it's through the system, just to be like freeze and submit.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's only, you know, it's only a generation ago that women were being taught to, you know, be obedient and quiet and I say a generation, it's just not that long ago.
Right, well, it was 70 years ago they got the right to vote.
Right.
So
I think there's a lot of progress been made, but there's a lot of built-in stuff as well.
Yeah.
And I also don't want to draw a parallel with racism.
Yeah.
But there's another part of our society where we've, you know, there's the, you know, systematic racism, and although a lot of progress has been made, you know, when was MLK's speech, like
60s, was it?
So 50 years ago-ish. Yeah.
50 years ago, yeah.
And
the
same, you know, those things have not been solved, far from it.
Oh,
and it'll take a lot more work.
Yeah.
And the same thing is true for this whole issue we're addressing right now.
Yeah, and then even for how we raise women and how we empower women, just like, and it's like sad to say this, just to be like, treat them as full human.
Yeah.
And treat them as we do men.
Yeah.
But like, going back to what you said, and it's going to take work for us men to be like, to get comfortable with being like, hey dude, not cool.
Yeah.
Not cool.
And I don't know about you, but I kind of like, I want to challenge myself to do that.
Yeah, I do too.
I want to call out the behavior that's not appropriate.
And so what I ended up doing later was, I was like, hey, I went up to that person, the female, the lady, and I was like, hey, here's what I observed. What do you want me to do? Like, if you don't want me to do anything, I'm cool with that. It's your deal. But just like, this is how I felt in the moment. I just want to try to like, and it's not, I'm not trying to brag, but it's like, I just need to know it, because I felt uncomfortable. And I don't want to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So it's just like, tell me what to do there. So, and she was like, oh, you could probably say something.
Okay, good.
But she just said it like that. She's like, oh, you could probably say something. That's fine.
Okay, so there was no, I don't know. It wasn't like, oh, wow, I'm so glad you're noticing that.
No, she's just like, oh, I appreciate it. Like, okay. Oh, yeah, please say something.
Okay.
Yeah. She's like, I would have been cool with that.
Yeah.
If you're observing something and we're kind of all lost in a moment or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's like, thanks.
Yeah. And like, I wonder maybe.
I wasn't really worried about the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. But yeah.
You could take him.
No. No. Look at me. Could run away really fast.
Yeah. Well, that works too.
Yeah.
That works for me.
But yeah. So more just worried about like if she was just going to be like, what the? Like, get away from me. So,
yeah,
but
yeah, so I don't know, maybe erring on the side of saying something's the better than not.
And two, like, I would maybe it'd be better just to get slapped by her and tell me to piss off than not doing anything and having something bad happen.
I can't see that happening.
Yeah,
you know, if you approach a situation
with good intentions,
and a kind of caring way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't see it being too bad.
I would hope so.
Unless it's like, hey man, like, I almost had his number and now he's left.
Yeah.
But they were colleagues, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, in your situation.
Yeah. So, which, whatever. But something else that I was thinking is, I went to a, wasn't really a men's group. It was more like this talk. But then it turned into a men's group, like a round table discussion. So there was about eight of us there, including eight of us plus like two teachers or speakers. And it was pretty much like this discussion about, you know, got into like, what words do we use and stuff like that. And like, but I instantly realized like how, like, I've talked to a lot of people on this podcast, and it's like, your willingness to do it, it's like, I get you here and like, oh yeah, he's a cool dude, and like, just kind of chilled out and has a pretty healthy mindset about it and it doesn't feel threatened. And that's kind of been pretty much all the guys to some degree. And there's probably, so that probably means that type of person's willing to come on the podcast and talk to me.
you've got a self-selecting group.
It's a bit of a self-selecting group. Yeah. But then I go to one of these talks where nothing is being recorded. Like everything, you know, I would never say who said these things or blah, 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 blah. But, and then I immediately realized, I'm like, oh, there are some seriously scared, like angry men out here about all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't run in those circles. And doesn't sound like you do.
No.
Know too many people like that. But yeah. Like there were some men where it's like, I didn't realize how threatened you felt by women like getting equality.
So that's what you mean by scared and angry. It's like they feel threatened by
They feel threatened.
Really?
Very threatened. Like I don't know how to exist. Like, I don't know how to exist. I don't know what to say. I don't know what I can say. It's really scary. And I'm just tired of it. I walk down the street every day in Portland and I say something. People yell at me all the time. I'm just like, wow. It got super intense.
Uh-huh.
And I just was like,
What was the context of this meeting? Like, how did y'all get together?
It was kind of a posted thing. And okay. I just got interested in it and went there. And, cause it was kind of like, middle of me doing this, so I'm like, oh cool, I'll kind of like engage with the community and see what's going on. And but I got there and I'm like, first of all, I'm like, oh, my mind, I have a pretty healthy mindset about all this.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was kind of, it felt good in that way.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, oh, I kind of see the problem.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's I want to draw a parallel here to politics, which we don't have to go into, but you know, when you're in like a nice bubble,
yeah,
as we are in Portland, it's easy to not engage with the other side, politically.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the same thing's happening here, that, you know, we can sit here and have these nice conversations, sure, about the work we need to do, but really we need to be talking to the guys who are threatened.
Yeah.
And like, how do we do that?
And so a little bit into this meeting, so this guy, I mean, it was palpably intense.
Yeah.
Like to the point where I'm like, I don't really want to be here. Like I'm just not that type of guy. I'm not like I'm just not, and I'm whatever. But okay, I just sat there and listened, and just, I went quiet the rest of the time because the whole environment was very intense. I mean, he was that angry.
Wow.
But so he kind of goes on, and he's just didn't want to even acknowledge having privilege. And we're like, oh, okay. So maybe he doesn't understand what we mean by, cause some of the guys were like, yeah, we have privilege as white men. It's like what we just talked about.
Yeah.
We get that, what that means. Right. And we tried to explain, it's like, well, if you, or even me, like as a non physically looking threatening person,
mm-hmm,
or walking down a street at night in Portland, I'm not worried.
No.
I'm not looking over my shoulder. I can't say nobody's going to do anything to me, but I'm fairly confident that I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You could just turn around and look at somebody and probably mean mug them, and they'll probably be like, whoa, you know what I mean? And, but as a woman, I would imagine they're walking down the street, they're on a high alert.
Oh yeah.
At night, if they're alone.
Yeah.
In Portland, even in Portland.
I think so.
That's privilege.
Yeah.
That's the privilege we enjoy simply because we're a man.
Yeah.
We're males.
And I'm like very, that particular situation I'm very aware of. And
yeah.
Have you ever been walking down the street at night and there's a woman like walking in the same direction, like 10 paces ahead of you?
Yeah.
And she notices you and starts to walk faster.
Yep.
Yeah. I just want to be like, hey, it's okay. Like,
I'm okay.
Like, yeah, like, don't, I want to be like, hey, like maybe we can walk together and have
ally.
Yeah. And I just am so aware of that.
Yeah.
And I feel so bad about it.
Yeah, I'm super aware of it when I'm running. I run early in the morning and sometimes there's still people out walking or whatever. And
right.
I will purposely take a really long, sure, path around them.
What's,
because first of all, like, female, even walking her dog, I feel like, and I'm not trying to say women are feeble at all here, but I understand, trying to understand what's in their head a little bit. Like, female walking dog alone in the early morning suddenly turns over and sees somebody running at them. You know what I mean? I'm like, that could scare the living shit out of somebody. So I'll just run.
Mm.
I'll just like go on the other side of the block, yeah, and come back or whatever.
What time do you run?
I'll wake up at like 4:15.
Oh, you run early.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like it.
Wow.
I like it. It's like my...
So it's dark.
Quiet well, time.
Maybe not this time of year.
It's dark to start, and then I get sunrise this time of year, which is cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty blissful at that time of day, though.
How long are you out for in the morning?
I'll go for 8 to 10, okay. Usually most days.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But it's a pretty magical time of the day. Because, like...
Yeah.
It's just, like, morning enough where... people who are partying are kind of done by like 3:30.
Yeah.
You know, so you miss those people, but mm-hmm. It's also so damn early that nobody's up.
Yeah, there's no cars.
There's no cars. There's nobody doing anything. So there's like nobody out there.
Yeah.
It's like this sweet zone of just solitude.
Yeah.
Mm. So.
So you enjoy that part of it?
I love that part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because otherwise, like, you know, I work a lot. I travel a lot.
Mm.
Always got my damn phone buzzing, doing something, emails coming in.
Yeah.
You know, I like to listen to podcasts. I like to learn.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to stop doing that. Just is. I don't know.
Just switch off.
It's just hard for me to switch off when I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I give myself this moment to switch off.
Yeah.
And that's the best time for me to do it.
And that is so healthy.
Yeah.
Mentally. As well as physically.
I feel great physically when I do it right, but the mental part, it's better. It's good for my, I feel like I'm more creative. I'm more everything.
Yeah.
I'm more of everything when I'm running.
Do you feel like it's a form of meditation?
It's definitely, that's how I treat running now.
Yeah.
My relationship with running is, and I've been thinking about this a little bit, just kind of about my identity and how. Just the identity as I've taken on over my life and how those have created the person I am, how they contribute to how I react to people when they ask me questions, how they just have contributed to my ego and all that stuff. And my whole view as how I consider myself a runner has been like, it's way different than it was when I was 18.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, now I just treat it more as what you said. It's like my meditation time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't race anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't care.
Yeah.
I just like running.
Mm-hmm.
Like people are like, how far? Yes. Like I just like to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's it. I love it.
You're not watching your splits.
No, I mean, I got like,
I've got a
killer Suunto watch.
Dude.
Because I like toys.
Yeah.
But I'm just like.
That's like the new one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the brand new one.
What's it called?
This is the free plug for Suunto. This is the Suunto 9.
I hope they're paying you for
this.
Yeah,
no, not at all. But not enough people listening to pay for me.
You know, I had a Suunto.
Yeah.
I sent it back.
Really?
Because it was like an older model,
mm-hmm.
and it just wouldn't sync with my phone.
Oh, yeah, this thing has been flawless.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but also... I bet it's probably twice the price of the one I bought.
I think this one retails for $600.
Yeah.
I don't pay retail for anything, but...
Nah, that helps.
Yeah. It's benefit of working in the industry.
Yeah.
But, So stuff like this, like, yes, I like toys.
Yeah.
I like nice things.
I mean, look at this podcast setup.
Oh, look at this podcast. This could not be more simple, right?
That's great, though.
It's great. But, like, so with the watch, like, with the split, I'll look down at my split or I'll look down at my time. I'm like... Okay. I'm like, oh, it's 10 seconds slower today per mile. All right, whatever.
That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Wake up and do it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
See if I can get it a little faster.
Yeah.
Or not. That's cool too.
Yeah. That's
so,
cool.
So, you know, I don't treat it that way anymore.
That's cool.
But how about you? How do you, cause I do want to talk about the race you did.
Yeah.
But well, what's kind of your evolution with running or your.
Well, here's the funny thing. I don't really consider myself a runner, which might sound weird.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
So I guess my brief like running resume is that I ran for the high school cross country team.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time I ran with my local club, like my athletics club.
So that's high school in Scotland, right? In Glasgow?
Yeah, yeah. High school in Glasgow.
And it was similar here, you guys running 5Ks?
Yeah, 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 something like that.
Yeah.
And we would run... there was some track stuff as well. I think I did the 800 for a while.
Oh, yeah. So you got track and cross country.
Yeah, and I wasn't particularly good either, but I was on the team for cross country.
Fun.
Yeah, and it was good. But the thing is, with them, with this high school team and with the club that I ran with, I enjoyed being fit and I enjoyed training. I didn't enjoy race day.
Mm.
You know, like... I don't know about you, but for me, before a race, there's just this nervousness and tension, and some people thrive on that.
Yeah.
I just didn't really enjoy it. So I kind of stopped running and just played soccer. I played for the high school. So, sorry to any of my friends that I'm calling it soccer.
Yeah,
but
you call it soccer. You call it, yeah.
So I played for the high school soccer team, and then I played for my local, like, amateur, we call it, soccer team for the best part of 10 years and didn't really run during that time. But so after that 10 years, this was probably now 10 years ago, I kind of stopped playing soccer because I discovered the mountains. Mm. And in Scotland, the scenery of the mountains are just stunningly beautiful. And I started hiking, doing a lot of hiking, a bit less climbing, but just a lot of outdoor type stuff. And then the hiking... I'd been hiking for a number of years, and in Scotland there are 283 mountains over 3,000 feet.
Oh, wow.
And a guy called Hugh Munro charted them and listed them, like, a 100 years ago or something. But now it's a challenge for people to climb them all.
Oh, cool.
And you climb them in rows, you call it. So I started doing that, and I climbed about 150 of them. But as I was doing that, a friend of mine got in touch and he's like, hey, there's this event, a mountain marathon, do you want to do it? And I'm like, yeah. And he told me about it. It's a 2-day event, you're in a team of two, you carry your tent, your sleeping bag, your mat, like sleeping mat, your cooking equipment, your food, your first aid kit, your waterproofs, like, but you do so in like an 18 litre pack. So it's like super light.
Sure.
And this guy was a road marathon runner and a pretty good one, like a kind of 3-hour-ish,
He's fit.
Yeah, fit guy.
Yeah.
And he said, let's do this event, which is 2 days long, and it's over the mountains and you have to navigate. So you're given a map. It's like a 2-day orienteering course. Mm. And I remember thinking, wow, I've not really been running. I've just been hiking. This guy is going to, like, destroy me when we get out there. And we went out there, and the exact opposite was true. He could not cope with the hills and the terrain. And I was like, come on, man. Like, let's go.
Let's go. I thought you were fit.
We've only got an hour more to go. Yeah. Like, let's keep going. And he really struggled.
What was it? Did you find a connection in... Did you find a connection to the mountains? How did you feel different when you were in the mountains hiking?
It was like, I've got goosebumps.
I know, right?
It was a meditation for me. Mm. Like, I went through a period of three, 4, 5 years where every weekend almost I had a really close group of friends, and we would do something at the weekend. And then Monday, Tuesday, we were just, texting, emailing back and forth. Like, that was so amazing. Yeah. Like, well, how about that? And then by Wednesday, it was like, okay, what are we doing this weekend? Yeah. And by Thursday, it was like, come on, man.
Chasing that mountain high.
Thursday, we'd be like down at the climbing gym or something. Yeah. And then on Friday, it's like, right, I'm leaving the office at 4 and we're driving north.
Nice.
You know, so we just would do that all the time.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
I don't know. What do you think that is about? Because I do these for my job. We sponsor this series of mountain races.
Yeah.
And I get to go to the mountains and, like, set up shop and party in the mountains and let people run in our shoes. But, you get out there and it's just makes you feel there's just something different that it's hard to explain.
It's a meditation. It's a disconnection from this crazy life we have of computers and phones and just always being on.
Yeah.
There's something, being in the mountains, being in the forest as well, I just love it.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it's just a way to get away.
Just to get away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that I did like a few of these mountain marathon events, and then I again, didn't run for years and years. And then in 2013, I was at a conference and some guy was like, yeah, I'm going to run the Chicago Marathon this year. I'm like, that sounds like fun. I've always wanted to do a marathon. And like that night I signed up.
Oh, jeez.
This was in like January.
Oh, and,
I had until October.
October, yeah.
So I was like, cool, I'm a runner now. And I ran like 5-6 days a week.
Yeah.
Like throughout that year. And then I was still living in England and I came over to Chicago, ran the marathon. And I remember at the end of it just being so emotional.
Broken.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that's why you get emotional. You're like broken and you achieve this thing. And you're like, oh my God.
So it was so hard. In my training, I'd never run more than 23 miles or 22 miles.
Yeah, that's pretty common, I think. Yeah. For most,
So you get to mile 24 and you're like, well, I've never been here before.
Right.
So it was awesome. But once I finished that marathon, that was October 2013, I didn't run again for, I don't think I even put on my running shoes for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
I just stopped. And the same is true, I just did this big event and I've run once in the 2 months since.
Yeah.
But I've probably cycled for 5 hours this week, you know, so I'm still active.
So running has more just been an on and off thing that you've enjoyed to do.
Yeah.
I'll pop in, check out what's going on in that running thing over there.
Yeah.
And pop out.
And it's kind of fun. It's fun, but you know, I play a lot of soccer and I cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you stay fit.
Yeah.
But I can see where you don't really identify as a runner. You like to do these challenges. You like to challenge yourself with running, but you don't necessarily identify as
it. Exactly. Yeah. Although I guess I am I guess for any other person having run a marathon, they're like, come on, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. This is hard to explain to people, but I don't really identify. I don't always say it like I'm a runner. I don't really identify with it all the time. I think some of it is I don't want to be put in a box.
Yeah.
I don't want to say I'm a runner because then people start to assume things about me. You know,
what would they assume that you wouldn't want them to think?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's probably nothing.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't want them to think I'm just, I don't know. It's a really good question.
Yeah.
Let's think about it.
Yeah.
There's probably nothing in there that's negative necessarily.
Are you saying that you have a great cardiovascular system?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's terrible.
Maybe it's that there's this picture in my head of runner that I have where it's, you're too serious about it, or that's all you think about. That's all you do. Or, you take it too seriously. You can't have fun with it.
Right.
I don't want to go for a run with you because you're a runner.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes I think, just thinking about it right now, because that was a good question, some of it, I feel like I don't want it to be an antisocial stigma that people place on me. Mm-hmm. If you want to go for a run, let's go.
Yep.
I don't care how fast.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, well, I'm really slow. I'm like, doesn't matter.
That's fine. We'll get to chat.
Great. We'll get to talk.
Or if you're out of breath, I'll talk.
And I'll talk. or you can tell me to shut up and we'll just exist together.
Yeah.
That's more important to me. Able to share that with people. So I think that's some of it.
Yeah.
I think it's sometimes seen as very antisocial type of thing. But then again, it's not. People go to run groups. People go to all this different stuff.
I met some great people. I started running with a group who meet in Forest Park every Saturday, and they meet and run around the river walk during the week. And there's another run club in North Portland that meet on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
A great bunch of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Very social.
Maybe some of it too is that, being a runner also carries a physical stigma. And I guess I just have a problem with people assuming anything about me.
Yeah.
I mean, I get all the time, you look at me and I'm like, well, yeah, you'll look like a runner.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, fair enough. But then people are like, you're really fast. I'm like, well, and I guess that's a compliment, but I'm like, no, I'm not really that fast at all.
Yeah.
I'm not fast.
But you run far though, right?
I just run. Yeah. So I'm not out there doing speed work and stuff, but
yeah,
I don't know. I guess at the end of the day, I don't like things that make me feel separate from others.
Yeah, or like put in a box or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Which, it's like, even saying it out loud now and having you describe it like that, I'm like, well, it's kind of ridiculous. But.
Yeah, yeah, we've all got our shit.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. You know?
So, tell me about this ultra that you did.
Yeah, so that was, it's called the Cape Wrath Ultra. And it's in Scotland. And actually, it's only the second time that they've actually held the event.
Cape Wrath.
Although the locals apparently call it Roth.
No.
But it's Wrath.
No, we're going to call it Wrath. Sounds okay. Much more formidable.
It sounds pretty badass, right? And it's an eight-day ultramarathon that basically goes from south to north through some of the most remote terrain in Scotland. And it's 250 miles over 8 days. And so your average is like 30, your average is 50k a day. But in reality, there's like day one, you just run 23 miles. And there's day six is like 42 miles long. But along the whole way, you do 11,000 meters. So 36,000 feet of ascent and 36,000 feet of descent. And as you'll know, like, that's so hard on the quads.
Down is the worst.
Oh, towards the end of, or in fact, from the middle of the race, my quads were destroyed. One of my knees was really swollen, and I could hardly go downhill.
Yeah.
I had to kind of hobble downhill for the last 4 days of the race. It was really, really hard. It was physically and mentally, like, probably the hardest thing I've ever done. And it's funny because a lot of, I just described myself, I'm not really a runner. And I signed up for this because a friend had signed up, and I'm like, wow, that sounds awesome. Like
fun.
Yeah. So my training was like, I ran a marathon 5 years ago, and I have never run that far since. So I kind of built up to like 21 miles, and I did a cool loop around Portland where I ran across one of the bridges to downtown and then ran all the way through Forest Park and then around St. John's Bridge and back. Yeah. From my house all the way around.
That's awesome.
It was like 22 miles or something. Yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. Next I'm going to do a 50K.
Yeah.
So I signed up for a 50K, a trail race.
Yeah.
And I'd never run 50K, and I'm like, I just want to finish this thing.
Sure.
Ended up coming second.
Oh, shit.
Here's the thing, before we get too excited, there were only 10 people doing the 50K.
That's all right.
Yeah.
That's all right, man. Yeah. That's rad. See, that's inspiring to me, though, like what you're describing, because I had that sense of like, kind of screw it, let's go for it-ness in me with running. And I'm like, even sitting here, I'm considering training for a 100-miler.
You mentioned that, yeah.
But there's just something I love about what you're describing, and I really admire, where you're just like, yeah, it sounds like fun. Let's go for it.
Right?
Yeah.
Where
I'm like considering, like, well, it's like, I know a lot about running, and I know where my body is, and I'm like, I just get so heady about it. Instead of just being like, just go have fun.
You know, I think my lack of understanding of what I was in for was a benefit, because I had no idea what I was letting myself in for.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you're running along in this race and you've got a lot of time to think. And the field kind of spreads out, but you do talk to people.
Sure.
And typically the conversation is, hey, so what's your favorite distance? What did you do to train for this?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? Well, I did a 50K, and then I did another 50K, and I did a few marathon distances and a couple of weekends where I did long runs both days.
Yeah.
Here I am. And everyone's like,
what?
Really? Because everyone else is like, usually I do 50 milers or 100 milers is my favorite. And yeah, I did the UTMB last year, or I did the Marathon de Sable like last year. And
major races.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, those were major mountain marathon, ultra marathons.
Right.
Like, people don't finish those.
Exactly. So only 60% of the field finished this race.
Yeah.
And a bunch of them have done those two that I mentioned. And a lot of them actually said this was harder. Just because of the just terrain and like the length of it, yeah. And stuff. But yeah, so people were really surprised to hear how little I'd done in preparation. And I do think I kind of paid for it. I mean, I finished, but it was really hard.
It seems like you may not have understood the type of pain that was coming. Which is good.
No.
I don't, you know, my understanding of what type of pain that's going to cause, I'm like, is the only thing that causes me to hesitate, or the type of training that I know I might have to do well in it. You know what I mean?
Have you ever broken a major bone, like an arm or a leg, or even, you know, even a finger?
I've broken a lot of bones.
So you know when you break a bone in the day or 2 days after, it like throbs?
Yeah.
You know that pain?
Yeah.
I remember lying in my tent, call it the end of day six, and I'd been out for 12 hours that day, and I'd eaten and I'd washed and I was going to bed, and I remember the pain in my knees and my ankles. It felt like my legs were broken, like everything was throbbing, and I couldn't get to sleep because of it. And it was so painful.
So you have eight days, right?
Yeah.
How many hours of sleep total did you have?
Oh, lots of sleep. I mean, I was sleeping for, you know, eight hours.
Okay.
That was fine.
Good.
And we were being well fed. It was kind of fully catered at mid-camp.
Oh, nice.
At the end of every day, you just had to get yourself from point to point.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. And what was so when you're thinking about this whole 8 days, tell me about your darkest mental moment. Like, what's going through your head at your lowest moment?
That's a really good point. A good question. That's me giving myself time to think.
Yeah, give yourself time.
There were a few moments, and it's funny. I made some videos on my phone with me, because I had my watch that was my tracking my distance. We each had a satellite tracker. It was like a chunky piece of kit. The organizers were tracking us, but also had my phone just as a backup.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I had my phone and I'd make videos and I'd talk to myself like in selfie mode.
Cool.
And so there were some cool times where I kind of like had some fun with myself and I was laughing at the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other times when I remember I definitely cried a few times.
Yeah,
like because I look behind me and there's no one, and I look ahead of me and there's no one, and I'm like, I really hurt and I know I need to run another 20 miles and that does not sound like fun and I just want to not be here.
Yeah.
And there were a few moments where I just really, there were tears.
Yeah.
And I would just be talking out loud like, Derek, what the hell are you doing? And I'd say to myself, you could just give up. You know, there's a kind of escape point here where you could call for help and, yeah.
Mm.
It was pretty hard.
Yeah.
I'm getting emotional just thinking about it, because it was
what's that feeling? You're in so much pain, you're alone. You're like, I don't.
Well, you begin to question. It's like, why am I doing this? Mm. That was the big question. And it's like, am I doing this cuz I want like people to think I'm cool?
Yeah.
Is that my motivation? Because if so, like, let's just give up right now. Yeah. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
And I'm human. I've got an ego.
Sure.
So of course I kind of like enjoy that people find it impressive or whatever.
Yeah.
But I do like to challenge myself,
mm-hmm.
and I think I in my head I just wanted to finish it.
Sure. Well, and two, it's you're trekking across your home.
Oh. Yeah, I'll show you pictures at some point. In fact, the media crew on the event team had drones, and there were drones just taking like footage the whole time, and it is absolutely stunning.
And so, what did that? I mean, did that add kind of a sense of like I'm 8 days across my homeland? What did that mean to you?
I mean, what we did was we ran the rough route of the Cape Wrath Trail, which is a hiking trail that people do in like 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we met a bunch of people doing that. And I kind of feel like I've got to see some of the most remote parts of my country, mm-hmm. places that people don't get to see. And for that, it just felt amazing. Mm. Yeah. And I've hiked most of the West Highland Way, which is the kind of next section below that. Because you can hike kind of through Scotland. There's hiking trails and stuff. So yeah, just I feel really lucky to have seen parts of my country that people don't get to see.
That's amazing.
Scottish people are too busy flying to Spain to sit on the beach. And I'm like, guys, have you seen, guys? Come on, people. There's a lot of good stuff to see in Scotland. Go explore.
Yeah, I know it's always, we always kind of ignore our home or what we do here. I mean, even living in some of these cities, like I didn't grow up there, but even like, I'll see that later.
Yeah.
I'll go do that later. I'll go somewhere else. It's like, well, you live in an amazing place.
Yeah. Have a staycation. Yeah, exactly. Again.
Exactly.
I feel like I need to do that in Portland, you know, I've only been.
I know. Yeah, so I'm the same way. And I grew up in Oregon. Yeah. So you're going through all these run, you start to question yourself a little bit, like, why am I doing this? Are you also, I always want to ask this, but because it seems forced, but like,
yeah.
Are you also just questioning, is your also your kind of your masculinity questioned in that, and then in that moment, like, you know, should I just man up and do it? Or what's your kind of your feeling around that, or your thoughts around that, whether or not you even identify with this isn't a masculine thing or not, but like for you internally, is there any self-talk like that going on?
I don't think the kind of struggle I had with that physical challenge directly related to any kind of masculinity question. I don't think so. In fact, some of the women doing that race were incredible athletes.
But a lot of women are actually better at ultra marathoning than men.
Yeah.
The further out you get, just because actually body composition starts to help them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's this woman, this lady named Courtney Dolwalter. If you ever look her up.
Yeah.
She wins these races, like 200 mile races.
Really?
Yeah. She didn't win Western States, but she recently like destroyed people.
Really?
And she ran it in like 17 hours. It's like a 100 mile race in 17 hours.
Well, the record's like
14, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's more of like some, you know, I'm assuming this was you, but some guys are like, oh, I'm not man enough to do this or that, or I am man enough, I'll do it. Or.
Yeah. I wouldn't say like that kind of self-talk comes into it, but yeah, no, I wouldn't.
Do you have that sort of self-talk in any area of your life?
A little bit. I'd say where it shows up for me is kind of, so I'm married and my wife and I, have had various discussions about how our life will look in terms of, you know, when we eventually have kids and, who's going to look after kids and who's going to be earning money. And I think there's part of me that kind of, while I like the idea that I could be a stay-at-home dad, in fact I love that idea, and that's definitely on the table, there's part of me that's like, but then you're not providing for your family. And I think that's probably the biggest like struggle that I have with that, like the self-talk of like, no, you have to like be the man of the house, and you have to like go out and, you know, provide for your family.
Very common here. Is that also a common thing in Scotland, provide for your family, be the men or the breadwinner, that sort of thing?
But then I guess in my particular situation, my mum raised me and my siblings.
Okay.
So my dad just wasn't in the picture. And, you know, I've been listening to podcasts. I know that, like, you know, you have your own story.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do wonder sometimes, like, how much of my kind of drive to be, like, successful and be able to provide for my family is kind of rooted in some, like, fear that I don't want to, like, end up like my dad and basically failing or something.
Does it feel like almost an abandonment if you did that? Like, you're just like, or you're skirting your responsibilities? I mean, if you feel like your dad, what about that feeling? If you said I would feel like my dad, what's that feeling? What are you matching? What are you afraid to match in your dad? Or
what
mirror, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, basically, for the thing I saw happen was he just walked away from his wife and four kids.
Oh yeah,
and I really don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
And what's really curious about this is that right now I'm about the age he was when he walked out.
Okay.
And I'm like, wow, it's kind of can be hard being a 30-something guy with all the, I want to say expectation, but the expectation kind of comes from within a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But there's an expectation of, I don't know, get a good job, be financially secure, be strong and all those things.
Yep.
And I'm like, wow, like it's kind of, I can begin to see how you could, like, if you weren't in a good place mentally, you could just freak out.
Break and run.
Yeah.
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 Hmm.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, I can't speak for other people, but I've always had the feeling where I'm like, I would love to be a stay-at-home dad. And like, you know, I shared earlier, like I like what I'm doing now for work, but I just don't get a lot of like intrinsic motivation from work.
Yeah.
I like to do things.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not like, work is not my goal.
Yeah.
Achievement in work is not my goal.
Yeah, you said you're not a career person.
I'm just not a career person. People are like, what do you want to do when you grow up? I'm like, have experiences and live. Like, it's not, and they probably meant work, but it's just like, I don't care. So when I say it's like, oh, I'd love to be a stay-at-home dad. It sounds like so much fun. I could do little projects, play with the kids. Seriously. And even you said, you know, it kind of sounds like fun in a way. And I've had other guys on the podcast say the same thing. And I'm not sure that that's like a super common thing, or maybe it's more common than we think.
I still think it's not that common,
yeah.
But it feels like it's becoming more common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think as guys, you know, and we're sitting here being vulnerable, sharing some of these stories, and as guys become more comfortable sharing some of these things, I think, for me, at least doing it helps me just relax and be comfortable with myself and just find more love in myself and all these sort of things. So when I'm like, you know, stay-at-home dad sounds cool.
I think it sounds awesome.
Yeah.
And I want to like try and explain what hesitations there are. I think that seems like a useful thing, because I think part of it is that there's definitely a financial aspect where I would, if I wasn't earning money, like, would I feel okay, like, meeting the soccer team and, like, spending $40 on beer one night?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Would that be okay if that was, like, money that my wife was earning? Like, how would she feel about that? Would that be cool?
Yeah.
Like, you know...
How would you feel like it was cool if it was reversed?
Totally.
Yeah.
In fact, we've just been having that exact conversation. Because she's a musician.
Oh, cool.
She'd been teaching high school the past few years. She's an awesome teacher.
Nice.
But her music is taken off to an extent that she's going to do it full time this
year.
Awesome.
Congrats.
Yeah. And there was this, you know, I just think there's, I mean, yeah, they're great. They're going to be awesome.
Yeah.
But I do think there's potentially a stigma attached with that where people make assumptions.
Sure.
Like, oh, how do you do that?
Yeah.
And I think, I know that it wouldn't be comfortable for her if people were like, well, you're only being a musician because, you know, Derek's earning for the two of you.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm just like, I don't care. This is awesome. We're a team.
Yeah, there
and
it
we
is,
both
yeah.
we both bring stuff to the table.
Right.
You know, whether it's like just day to day life and getting stuff done mm-hmm. at home, or whether it's earning money. Like she probably brings more to the table than I do.
Yeah, and it's and one of the things like. People like I think eventually, and I'm not saying either one of us are perfect, we have this perfect mindset about anything, but when you start becoming a little more like breaking free from the constructs mm-hmm. of things, it gets pretty hard at a certain point, because then you're like, then you realize how stuck some people are in it.
Yeah.
And it, in right or wrong, it does affect you.
Mm-hmm.
Like it can affect you in the workplace. Yeah. But like you just said, it's like, well, then other people will look at this situation where we're both freely, like, happy doing our own thing. She's a musician and I can do this. And, mm-hmm. like, we're both happy and free yeah. from these constructs that have been placed on us. But other people don't see it that way.
Yeah. Oh, people are quick
that
to,
sucks.
To judge, I want to say.
Just to point it out.
Sure.
It's like, wait a minute, you're not living in the construct that yeah. that's right, yeah. quote-unquote right.
Another great example of this is that so my wife proposed to me.
Oh, okay. Tell me about that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So, you know, we'd been dating for a couple of years, and I could tell you about how the proposal went down, because that's an awesome story. But basically, I think the interesting thing was I remember a friend in Scotland, when I told him about it, I was like, yeah, and like, you know, Audra proposed to me, and he was like, wait, what? She proposed to you, like, in his exact words were, does that not make you feel less of a man?
Ew.
And I was like, no.
It makes me feel like she loves me.
Yeah, it's like there's this, like, human being out there who's going to, like, put herself out there and, you know, organize a whole awesome day and propose to me as part of it. I'm like, that makes me feel amazing. No, it doesn't make me feel less of a man.
Oh, man.
So
yeah, goosebumps thinking yeah, about that. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I think it's great, but just so interesting that some, you know, that was a guy I've known for a long time in Scotland, and his first reaction was, "Oh wow, is that not somehow making you less of a man?" Yeah.
I can't get there with that. Like,
no, not at all.
Because my reaction was, "That's cool. That's just like right? She loves you so much, or that she just you guys were so comfortable and like." She did it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That's one of those are some of the constructs that annoy me.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, guys need to make the first move, or guys need to propose. And
oh, that, yeah.
I don't know.
Here's an interesting point though. You know, you mentioned guys making the first move. You know, as we kind of move towards more equality for women, because that's what a lot of this conversation is about. I do wonder, and this might be a little controversial, but I feel or I see that there are many women out there who still like to be traditional in inverted commas, and it's like, yes, I want the guy to make the first move. Yes, I want you to pay for dinner, or whatever that traditional way of doing things is. And it's like, I don't know. Do we need to also deconstruct that?
I think it's okay. If that's what they want, that's okay.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's just like the first move should just be polite and just be like, hey, can I take you out for a drink?
Yeah.
And if the answer is no, then the answer is no.
Yeah.
Then you don't keep driving at it. You don't keep, you know, you don't get aggressive about it.
Of course.
It's kind of how I feel about it. But then again, I also have the mindset of I like buying dinner. You know, it's not about a power thing. It's just like, I like treating my friends to drinks. I like treating everyone to, like,
me too.
It's just my thing. Like, I just, it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And doing in that respect, what makes me feel good is not harming anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my generosity, that my generosity makes me feel good. Like, you can't, I'm not going to harm somebody by saying, hey, I'd love to buy dinner.
Yeah.
Because it makes me feel good.
Sure.
But I don't know. That's tricky waters there, because it's, there definitely needs to be a balance on both sides too, though, where, yeah, okay. So, you know, some of us guys, like for myself, I'm like, all right, I'm in the dating world and it's like, I'm not going to be super aggressive. I wasn't going to be in the first place. So if you're interested, you also can't be afraid to let me know you're interested.
Yeah. Yeah.
So absolutely. I guess that's where I'm getting is just don't buy into the part where I'm going to be offended by you being interested.
Yeah.
And just let me know.
Yeah.
Two humans, just communicate with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where I think maybe the next step is like, hey, just let the good guys, the good guys will like to, if you let them know.
Yeah. And here's the thing, you know, and I heard you speak about this before, you know, in the dating world, it's like, you know, you're quite, you know, a gentle soul, right? Mm-hmm. You're not, I know there's something, what's the thought I'm trying to come up with here? It's like, there's a way in which, or I don't know, it's somehow, if you treat women, if you're like a dick,
yeah,
women are going to like you. Because you're like, you're strong and you don't give a shit and you don't care what they think. And somehow, deep down, that's going to make women attracted to you.
Yeah.
Do you ever hit up against that? And it's like, well, I'm not like that.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I've observed so much of that.
Yeah.
Where I'm just like, how are you attracted to that asshole?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just not going to get there.
Yeah.
I'm just not.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm not going to be that asshole. Or, you know, like I, sometimes it's like, I'm not going to be the overconfident guy.
Mm.
So if you want a hug, yeah. Like you want love.
Yeah.
Like, I'm probably your guy, but yeah. Like to be that big, strong, like bravo macho or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what you're asking, but I'm just not.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get there.
Yeah.
And, but I think there still is an attraction to it, and it may not be like a popular opinion. And I'm not saying, I never say all women X, Y, Z. I never say all men do this or that.
Yeah.
But there, observably, there definitely is still an attraction to that.
Yeah. Seems that way.
And whether or not that, maybe that's biological, you know, that women, cavemen, you know, they were attracted to the person who would be more dominant because it was a procreation type of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the main thing too is we can't ignore biology. We can't ignore biological differences. And I'm not talking about like transgender issues or anything like that.
Mm.
I'm just talking about things that we've evolved as men and women to be attracted to for the survival of the species.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I think that's getting a little like ignored or pushed aside. When I think the more we acknowledge those differences, the more common ground we'll find. And we'll be able just to communicate a little better.
Yeah.
But.
Well, it's, that stuff's kind of built in. It's not even.
It is.
It's not even. You know, we're talking about stuff that's learned. Like,
yeah.
You know, guys should provide and women. I know the old sort of way. Mm-hmm. Of doing things where there were these specific gender roles.
Those are definitely learned.
Yeah, that's learned. But you're talking about something much more kind of primordial. Like you don't even know it's...
And even the attraction, the attraction thing.
Yeah.
You know, you can start reading into that too. A lot of attraction is that like that primal survival instinct where our brains are much smarter than sometimes our like physiological responses are.
Completely.
Right? You can see that with diet. People, a lot of the problems with diet is that people starve themselves, right? They think they're going to lose weight by not eating.
Mm.
And then they eat something while their body thinks there's a famine.
Right.
And so they store it all as fat.
Oh.
And they're super unhealthy. Uh-huh. And then they pack on fat once they eat anything because their body thinks, oh, there's a famine. Oh, there's no food.
I know how to, like,
I know how to survive. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to protect your heart. I'm going to protect your liver. Mm. I'm going to protect your major organs. So I'm going to pack a lot of fat around those. So a lot of the times where, you know, anorexic people or whatever, they'll eat something and then they'll be super unhealthy on the inside, or they'll have long periods of not eating and they'll eat a bunch of food and balloon up.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So that's, but my point is, it's just like this physiological response to your dumb body, like your brain is out, you know, tricking your dumb body. Your body's like famine.
I really believe, and this is something I've been realizing more and more, like, I really think we should listen to our bodies a lot more.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, if you've physically exerted yourself, your body's going to crave the thing it needs.
Yeah.
Like, your body will take, like, sometimes you just want to eat a salad.
Almost specifically. It can be very specific.
Yeah.
Like you just said, a salad. I've been on a run. I went on a run one time where I cut short because I was like, I was listening to my body and I'm like, I have this intense craving for a donut. Like, but I think it's like, oh dude, you're just so depleted and your body's like, give me fat and carbs now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like this intense, like, I didn't panic, not even close, but like, it was an intense feeling, like turn around and go home.
Wow.
So,
and did you get a donut?
I don't know where, remember what I ate, but I just was like, I'm cutting this run. It made me change my behavior.
Yeah. But, you know, even, you know, aside from, like, the fuel that we need, I think I'm a great believer in gut feeling.
Oh, yeah.
And whether it's, I don't know, like, you ever like, walk into a room and you're like, whoa, what's going on?
There's here? A feeling
there,
here.
It's like, I know that there was an argument happening here, even if it's not happening now. Like, what are we sensing there?
I don't know.
Like, we don't understand that. And I think it's, like, amazing.
Well, they say, you know, your second brain is your stomach, right?
Yeah.
There's something to that, and they're starting to learn now that your gut, your microbiome is mainly in your gut, and they're starting to link a lot of people's depression to their gut biome being thrown way off. So actually, when your stomach is messed up, when it's all messed up, it's actually causing depression and things.
Wow.
So, but even to go a little like more existential, like you get these, and we feel these energies. You're like, something just doesn't feel right here. Like I can walk into a room or whatever, and I'm not saying I have this supernatural ability, but I'm pretty sensitive just to energy. And I'm just like, this place isn't for me.
Yep. I've been there.
I don't know what this is. I don't know how to describe it. Don't really care, but I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Because it's just not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Or it just could be maybe there's something going on in the office that day where I'm less like, kind of a weird day in the office today. Like, it just feels weird today.
Uh-huh.
Is everybody okay? You guys okay? You know?
And everyone probably says, yeah, we're fine, because that's what we see.
Sure. And I that question.
Yeah.
How are you?
Yeah, worst question.
I hate that question because I can't. I'm always just like, do you really want to know?
Yeah, how long you got?
Because I'll fucking answer that question. How long you got?
Put on these headphones.
Yeah, yeah. It creates problems more because I'm just like, yeah, I'm not doing very good today.
Yeah, today's been pretty shit, actually. Yeah.
I would prefer that if I ask somebody, it's like, no, I really want to know.
Mm.
But, yeah.
So do you think, you know, you're saying you think you're quite sensitive to it?
Yeah.
Do you think that we have varying sensitivity to that kind of energetic?
I think everybody has it. It's just how in tune are you with it? I mean, I've, like I said, I spend a lot of the time just quietly thinking. I'm pretty introspective, like almost in an annoying level for myself.
Oh, yeah.
Where I've been telling people, it's like, I need to just do some stuff that's dumb every so often. Like, I really feel like I should go buy a Nintendo and play Zelda.
Zelda's pretty good.
Oh, Zelda's great. But, you know, but like the point is like, I'm always listening to a podcast, or I'm always like learning something, or I'm always reading something, or I'm always thinking about what I'm thinking about. And it's just gets exhausting. But you know, when you even consider, like we were talking about my run, it's like this meditation.
Yeah.
So I'm always kind of doing things that are more quiet. Mm-hmm. And once you kind of bring everything down and you're like quiet and you're introspective, you start to get in tune with these sort of things. Mm. You start to feel them a lot more. Even practicing a little bit of meditation here and there.
Yeah.
You really start to get in tune with things and listening.
Well, it's kind of, it's like we have a lot of noise.
Yeah.
In our lives, like just with devices mostly.
Sure.
And just always been switched on. So I think you're right. Yeah. Like just quietening your brain a little bit,
yeah,
like allows you to hear the subtle or feel the subtle.
Yeah.
I don't know how to even know how to describe it. Well,
I think for some people who don't practice any of these things, like no meditation, no running, no.
Yeah.
Like the first time they sit down to do it, it's chaos.
Mm.
Right, their just brain is spinning and it's going out of control. They're like, I can't do this, I can't do it, and they just shut it down and they just close off. I've done some. Have you ever done a float tank?
No.
Do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a place that does it. In fact, it's on Everett, but over the other side of the river.
Yeah. There's even I don't know where you live, but there's even one up on 23rd. That's great.
Yeah.
Float shop.
I'm over the other side.
Like, yeah, there's a few over there.
Yeah. I want to try it. So what's it like?
So it's like a forced meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like 90 minutes. I like the 90 minutes as opposed to 60. Because just when you get past 60, you like go into a different world.
Really?
So, you know, there's a couple different setups, but the one that I've been in, there's this pod, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's completely dark. It's completely silent. The water is skin temperature, so you can't really you can feel it, but you can't really feel it if you once you get still. There's like 1,500 pounds of salt in this tank, so you float.
You're like how much are you floating?
Completely buoyant. Like you will not. There's no way you if you just like completely go dead relaxed.
It's like you're in like. You'll float. Or
yep.
Something.
Yep. You're just floating. It's like you're just laying on your back.
Yeah. Because in normal water. Yeah. I mean, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of float in normal water, right? But this is like you can't sink.
Okay.
So there's no fear of sink. Once you get. Yeah. My tip to everyone doing this, if you want to try it, is just know that you won't sink.
Yeah.
You will not sink. You can fall asleep. You won't sink. There's no danger. So you get in there, right, and you kind of just get in position, and you're kind of sloshing around just for a second, and then you kind of get into the still space. And then as long as you've accepted you're not going to sink, and you can start to relax every muscle. And then is when the meditation starts, because you're like, at first you're like, I have 90 minutes of this. I can't see anything.
Yeah.
I can't hear anything. I can't feel anything. All my senses are pretty much shut down.
What?
The only thing I have left is my consciousness. And then you're like, what is my consciousness? And then you like go down this rabbit hole of thinking until all of a sudden, for me at least, I just go, I'm out. But I'm not out.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll start seeing, I don't know. I don't know where my mind goes, but it's not in my body. Like I'm just experiencing different things that I can't really describe. It could just be I'm reliving something from this, you know, like this life, but like we're thinking about certain people, or I have these very strong feelings come up and I'm like working things out in my head. And then all of a sudden, like just like I went out, I come back and I'm like, oh, music is coming up and it's 90 minutes is gone.
Oh, wow.
But when I come back, the thing is like, I wasn't asleep.
Mm.
Like, I remember what was going on. I didn't feel like asleep. It feels like this deep meditation where you almost, you know, like almost leave your body.
So, yeah, I guess I'm trying to understand. Are you like trying to get there, or does it just happen organically?
It just so like it doesn't. I'm not now. I can kind of just get into it,
right?
Because I've done it several times.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't have to try it the first time. It just it probably took me longer because my mind was just like,
yeah.
You know, the one thing like I've always heard about meditation, or there's this quote. It's like, if you don't have time to meditate, you need to meditate longer.
Yeah.
And it does, and it's true, because if you're not, if your brain is still spinning, then you need to go longer. Mm-hmm. And it hurts, kind of hurts in a way, right? Mm-hmm. It's like this mental, like, just this mental spinning. And it's like, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm just going to shut it down. I'm not doing it right. But mm-hmm. once you break over that point where it stops, then you're in it. Mm-hmm. And you're just existing with your mind. So, and then that little spin, that little, like, I'm thinking, just gets shorter and shorter and shorter until eventually it's just like, oh, my body knows it's in the tank.
Yeah.
And here I am. Boom. I'm gone.
Yeah.
But kind of going back, relating that when we were talking about that, that gives me that sense of being in tune with that energy. Like, I'll come out of there and I'm just like, first of all, the salt, if you've never done a salt soak, it feels amazing on your muscle.
Mm.
Your skin comes out feeling good. It's like soaking in the ocean.
Yeah.
But a little more intense, but you just feel really good. But you, I always tell people, I kind of feel like a baby giraffe. Entered back in my body. Have you ever seen a baby giraffe walk when it's first born or whatever? It's just like kind of awkward and lanky. And it's like, what is this body that I'm in? And I'm just like awkward.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel when I come back to.
Wow.
Where I'm just like a little disoriented. So like the coming back to is a little weird feeling, but you feel amazing.
Yeah.
Like you're clear on everything. You just feel happy.
I think you've got to try this.
Oh, you've got to try it.
And do you do any, you know, you said like your running's a kind of meditation. Do you do any traditional meditation?
Yeah, just sit quietly for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do? I just sit quietly and just sometimes I just make up my own word to say, or I'll just go breathing in, breathing out. Mm-hmm. Just something simple just to focus on, or I'll gaze at something, or just sit there quietly and just see where it goes.
I find that quite hard. But
Have you tried it?
Much? Yeah, I took some classes.
Yeah.
Signed up for some classes.
You're in Portland?
Yeah, yeah. So I was working out of one of the WeWork offices downtown.
Yeah.
And this awesome woman, Melissa, would come every Wednesday lunchtime and do a 1 hour class. And it was just really great. It was like midday mindfulness or something.
I love it.
Anyway, through a set of circumstances, she ended up starting or acquiring a little unit where they decked it out as a meditation and yoga studio down in Selwood.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's called Meditation for Regular People.
Nice.
So there's a plug.
I like
it. And Melissa is just this awesome woman, and she just spends her life reading and learning and learning and reading, and then she'll tell you these little awesome snippets of knowledge.
That's and so wisdom. Cool.
And she does classes like every day.
Mm.
And it's really cool. Just kind of guided meditation.
You enjoy it?
Yeah. Oh, I come out of that feeling great.
Yeah.
Like I can be feeling pretty stressed or anxious. And I can go to like that meditation class and it really just calms things down.
Yeah. Do you feel like you get around her, probably, maybe there's just a different energy coming off of people like that?
Mm. Oh yeah.
People and like that calm me down. Like I just like I'll walk into a room and some people like that, it's like this wave of like, oh, I feel so much better right now.
Yeah. Or just with some people, there's just an energy, but some people it's the hug.
Yeah. Oh.
And you're just like,
hug, man.
You're just like,
there's something different about this hug.
Yeah. And there's a bit more to it, and it's just held for a minute, and you're like, oh, that was like, there's like maybe
you just hugged my soul.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. And that is big.
Yeah. It sounds like you probably dig the float tank.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. I think I'm going to check it out.
It is like a kind of a forced meditation.
I'll have a look.
But it's deep. It's very deep. So it's like you come out of it and it feels just so much different.
Like you don't make any big plans after it and drink lots of water.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like I'd never make, it's either in the evening. So I'm just like, and I don't, maybe I eat like an hour before or whatever. And then I go do that. Or
you
can do it either way. You could do it fasted. You could take a bunch of edibles and do it if that was your thing. Like, there's different ways to
explain. That would be intense.
I've done it one time. I've done it one time, but it was a little like, it was a little intense.
Oh, wow.
I'd probably try it again, but it was, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun, but.
Yeah.
So there's different ways to experience it and kind of get this, I don't want to say like psychedelic experience because I've never taken psychedelics, but it's very otherworldly.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah. So well,
you hear that a lot about, you know, deep meditation. Yeah. It's not surprising to hear.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. It's been, I recommend it to everybody.
Yeah. I think I'll go check it out.
Yeah.
I went and did a massage and it was a spa thing. And that was awesome. And I think the float tank's like the third thing you could do.
Oh yeah.
It was just like.
Definitely. And there's always a Groupon.
Oh yeah.
Oh, there's always a Groupon. Yeah. Just pop on a Groupon. I think there's one at that Everett.
Yeah.
The Everett Healing House or something.
I went and did their Father's Day special and it's like, I'm not a father, but I'll take your special deal.
Thanks. What'd they say?
Oh no, I went in and they were like, oh, it's going to cost like X. And I said, oh no, but I thought there was a package deal. And they're like, oh yeah, we'll just give you the Father's Day special.
Nice.
Like, okay.
You're like, cool. One day. Yeah. It's like eventually I'm a potential father.
Yeah, we're all potential.
You're right. Well, yeah. Well, careful.
Yeah.
Cool. So we do those questions, two questions from women, what women wonder.
Uh-huh.
And one of them.
Oh, cool.
One of them I have for you is from a mutual friend.
I think we only have one mutual friend.
We only have one mutual friend, so.
Can we say, can we say her name?
I don't know.
She knows.
She'll know.
Thinking of you.
Yeah, we're thinking of her. So this actually came up in something that she was talking about, and she made the comment of, I don't see any men here commenting on this. So the question is, and it's, I kind of just molded the question here, but we can kind of talk about the question a little bit, but how do you feel when you contribute, to a conversation with a personal story? So if you're just in a conversation and somebody's sharing with you about something, do you kind of feel like shitty about sharing your personal story in that? I mean, we're sitting here having a 2-hour discussion, so that's a little different.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that's kind of what she's talking about, but.
My first thought is it depends. It depends, first of all.
For sure.
And I think the first thing is it depends how it's received.
Yeah.
There are some people are better at conversation than others.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
And sometimes, like, if there's a conversation going on and something comes up for me that's a personal story, I am, like, delighted to share that. And what it would feel good if people are like present and listening to it. It would feel less good if I'm starting to like open up and someone just takes the conversation elsewhere because they're not really interested. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And part of it too was, you know, what she said was like a feeling, do you feel bad about it? It's like, well, no, context matters, right? Like, if somebody like comes to me and like, look, I just need somebody to talk to right now. Like they're super depressed or they're like, like seriously sad. And I just need somebody to listen. Not really my time to share any stories. No. So like in that moment, if I started sharing a story, like it's just in my bad. Cause I'm not listening and being present. Like you said, like, I really like how you said just being present with the person. And part of that is like, being able to read the situation like, okay, you know what? Actually, it'd be really cool to share this story right here because sometimes if I open up to you, if I share a vulnerable story, sometimes I don't want to feel alone in that. Sometimes it's if you go, yeah, you know what? I felt the same way when X, Y, and Z happened. It's like, it makes me feel better.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Other people have this weird thing too that we can share in.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't make, I have a problem with feeling like I'm other all the time. Like I'm living because I've worked to live outside boxes. But what that means is when you or with people who are inside these boxes, inside these constraints still, which is do you, it makes me feel different.
Yeah.
And I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, I think as humans, I mean, we're looking for connection.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what we're all about.
Sure.
And as part of that, like, I think again, built in, like deep down, we want to be part of something,
right?
Part of a group, part of a movement, or a, you know, whether that's like supporting a sports mm-hmm. team, or, you know, I'm not religious, but you know, if you're part of a religion yeah. and you go to whatever religious place of worship you go to, and you like get to hang with people who are yeah. on the same level, and you feel part of that.
Yeah, we are definitely pack animals.
Yeah, it's, yeah, yeah, and it's, I think it's very strong.
And so in a conversation, like to share a story, I don't want to explicitly say, and you share your story. So you just, like you said, be present, and I'm cool with that. Yeah. But
maybe the question it was kind of coming from, like, do you ever feel guilty about it?
Guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other direction I would go with that is personally, if I just meet someone and they're genuinely show interest in me and like what I do and who I am, and they ask a bunch of questions, that feels great.
Yeah.
I come away from that thinking, wow, that was like a really cool person. Yeah. I like them. And I think that, I don't know, there's something about having someone be interested in you is really cool.
That's a skill.
Yeah.
Like, I get that from you immediately, where you're, like, genuinely just interested in me. I don't know why. I'm not saying that's, like, you should be, but, like, you're just genuinely interested.
Yeah.
And that comes across. Mm. But it also makes me feel like this is going to be a back and forth, like, share.
Totally.
Relate. Because if you just, like, if you just came, like, all right, let's go. You're like, I'm like, oh, shit, like... This could be a long one,
yeah.
So or a short yeah. one, but like, you know, so yeah, totally. If somebody's showing interest, then I think there's like there's this mutual.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be any guilt.
It's all about reading it. It's like I think there's a balance, and actually, I do check myself sometimes. I like to talk about myself.
Yeah,
yeah. maybe we all do, right? So I just think there's the art of conversation, the art of connection. It's like you got to have some balance.
Yeah. Well, even in this, this podcast, I think this whole time, you know, this during this whole conversation, there's been moments where I'm like, should I share that? What should I say here? Like, how do I let him know that I agree and like I'm with you?
Yeah.
How do I let you know I'm with you? Like, oh, I felt that too.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. But like, maybe I also
need little paddles that say, I feel that too. I feel you, bro.
Yeah. I feel you, bro. I hear you, man. But also I will share with you because you do seem interested.
Mm.
So maybe that's the line too, where it's like you, if the person doesn't seem interested, you can go, oh, I hear what you're saying.
What was the question again? Can you
Oh yeah, I know. Well, that's what happens with this a lot too.
Can you reread it?
I kind of adapted it a little bit, but it was more of the guilty part. You feel guilty when you're sharing your personal story in a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'd say I have done. There have been situations where I felt guilty, but it's where on reflection I'm like,
it's a hindsight thing.
I really just kind of made that all about me.
Yeah.
And that doesn't feel good. And there's some guilt there, but I think, yeah.
Maybe that's, and I don't know what you said or what the context was, but that could be a little harsh. Just from me sitting here talking to you now, like, I would assume that your intention was probably good.
Yeah, but...
Harsh on yourself, I mean.
That is something that I am.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way.
I'm pretty hard on myself.
I'm really, yeah. I don't know what that is, but I think... You know, to be a little more gentle and loving to ourselves. It's like, you know, we're trying to have the best intention here. It's like, I'm just trying to be with you and just trying to help. Mm-hmm. But sometimes just shut up and listen.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And actually, I think I've heard you say that, you know, be be a bit more gentle, a bit more loving of yourself.
Yeah.
That's, I've been trying to do a bit more of that. And yeah. Recently took up yoga, actually.
Oh, nice.
With that in mind. And it's awesome.
Good.
And just like, just trying to slow down a bit.
Just slow down.
Yeah.
We're not in a rush.
Yeah.
Life is short, too short to go fast.
Yeah. Which is kind of like a paradox in itself.
It is.
Yeah.
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 So.
Anyway, don't, yeah. So that's good question.
I just thought that was an interesting one that she brought up. And I don't know, gender versus gender, I don't know if it is a thing. Could have just been the people who were willing to comment on Facebook on that thing on that day were, happened to be mostly females. I don't know.
Do you get these questions on Facebook?
I get these questions. I've just asked people for these questions and I've collected them. Yeah.
Cool.
Send them in.
Yeah.
So, I've got quite a big list, but there's some I like and there's some that I've had to like, I'm like, I don't really understand the question. So,
right.
But most of them are like, some of them I'm just like, I never thought about that.
Mm.
You know?
I think it's a great, like, can I call it a segment?
Yeah.
It's a great segment. Like, Women Wonder, that's such a cool idea.
Yeah, I kind of like it. I think it's created some pretty cool conversations. One of them, I mean, so you're like episode, I don't know, 12 or 12, I think. But,
yeah.
But so I haven't got over all of them, and I'd like to actually repeat some of them just because there's some of them that were super interesting. So, like the next one is, if you were going to be reincarnated and you had the opportunity to choose to be male, female, it says or a third gender, and which had no societal expectations or rules attached to it, what would you choose and why? You got it. You get the redo. You being male, female, or I don't know.
I mean,
third gender.
Okay, so gut feeling. As soon as you said that, my internal response was male. I'll be male.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And why? But already I'm kind of second guessing it.
Yeah. No societal expectations. Remember that. So.
There's no societal expectations.
Or rules. So you're not, I guess we're removing, what we're trying to, I guess what it's trying to get down to is just talking about like,
so
almost down to biology. Would you biologically rather be male or female? I have to like try to interpret these questions. I've already answered this one and I don't remember what we talked about when we answered it.
Yeah. I mean,
I know my answer, but
I think I'm curious. I'm curious what sex is like for a woman.
Yeah.
And as a man, I'll never know.
Yeah.
So that's a thing.
So it could be a discovery thing other way.
I guess I would ask this person like, okay, so if I get reincarnated, will I maintain all the memory of this life?
Yeah.
Because if I did, I'd for sure want to be a woman because then I could like have some really interesting comparisons.
Good point. So that I guess the attraction would definitely be you would want the comparisons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because otherwise, I don't know if I could put that's a good point. I mean, I'm with you. And when I had answered this the first time, I'd still stay in this answer. I'd be a male.
Yeah. I mean, it's where I went straight away and there was no reasoning. It was just what I felt.
Well, I'm looking at it like from almost a biological perspective where I'm like, the biology of a male is just simpler, like easier to handle.
Yeah.
It's like I don't have to deal with, you know, menstruation cycles and stuff like that, where I'm just like,
mm-hmm.
And I don't look down on like female, whatever they, you know, but I'm just like, oh, it just seems simpler to be a man.
I think
it's easier to be a man.
Biologically, it's much easier to be a man.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
I feel weird saying that, but like,
I mean, I think so. I mean,
what I've observed and what I know of physiology.
Yeah, I mean, think about having a child.
Oh, God. I don't want to.
Yeah, but...
it's like a pain we'll never experience.
But not even just the pain part, but the whole...
Oh, the whole... The gestation or whatever it's called,
9 months or whatever of, like, your life is dictated by whatever's going on in your body.
Yeah, you got all sorts of weird cravings going on, and hormones raging.
And as the father, for example, you're just like, cool, like, what's meant to tell?
Cool. Yeah.
So yeah. You want me to, like, I don't know. So I just think we get it way, way easier.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll acknowledge that.
I'm very, very aware of that.
I think we're aware of that.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's some of the question is like, how aware are you?
Yeah, but I don't know, like, is that... So the point, we're very aware of that. You and I are.
Yeah. Is that a common thought?
Is it universally true?
Probably not.
You know?
I don't think it... Again, like I said earlier, I don't think anything is universal
in this,
but... I would say the majority of men probably wouldn't have even thought about it.
Yeah, or certainly there will be, I don't know, it goes back to the point that, you know, I'm sitting here, you're sitting here because we're like this kind of self-selecting group who are curious about all this stuff.
Yeah.
There are plenty of people who don't have these conversations.
Right, we're not angry, we're just kind of like, oh, open about it.
Curious. Cool.
Curious.
Really curious.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's important for us to keep in mind.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I've like said that here, but it's something I had been thinking about where it's like, especially after that group where it was like, yeah, this is kind of self-selecting.
Mm.
Like, I'm going to try to get my grandfather on here. It's just to see if I can get 20 minutes out of him.
I think that's, you kind of want to get, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a phrase for it, but. Yeah, you want to get someone on who's not already got their head in that space to see what's going on in their head.
Yeah, and for him, it would be a way different space.
Yeah.
He might not even know what's going on with all this stuff. He comes from a time where it's like, hey, woman, get me my coffee. And the woman's like, okay. And it's like completely happy with it. I'm like, I guess that's your deal. I'm not going to judge. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we said before, you know, that's. It's only a couple of generations ago.
Yeah, two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so cool. So I have the quick questions that I like to ask everybody. The first one is, if you could travel back in time to visit your 16-year-old self, what would you say?
Oh, I forgot about this one.
Good.
And as soon as you started saying it, I'm like, oh, I should have thought about that.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I think it's something like, don't compromise on what you want or who you are for the sake of trying to keep other people happy.
Yeah.
Cause I think for me, like, a big part of my adult life has been kind of like keeping other people happy and losing touch with what I really want.
Yeah.
So it would be like, you know, just like be like, do you.
I like
and
it.
don't care. Not don't care, but
no, I know what you mean when you say that. Yeah. I say that phrase a lot too, and I know what you mean.
Yeah, something like that.
I like it. One of the greatest lessons, what to do or not to do, you learned from your dad. And even though he wasn't around, I think you could still learn lessons though.
Yeah, I mean,
you hinted towards it a little bit.
When he was around, like in my very younger life, I remember some broken promises. And so for me, it's like, just, you know, keep your word, like be true to your word. So that's like a definitely do that.
Yeah.
And like what not to do. I mean, it's just the pretty big one of like, don't walk away from responsibility just because it's hard.
Mm.
Yeah.
Those are good. Those are powerful.
Yeah.
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 Cool. Thanks.
Cool.
If you could live the life of one man, real or fiction, who would it be and why?
This one I did think about.
Yeah.
And I was talking to a friend about it, and I said my first answer was Neil Armstrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, you get to go to the moon.
You get to go to the moon. Like, I like it.
Who wouldn't want to do that? But then she was like, oh, but what was the rest of his life like? And I said,
oh, that's a damn good question.
I don't really know. Because like the whole astronaut thing was probably like a...
That's peak. the pinnacle,
yeah. But then I was like, okay, I don't know what his life was like, although it'd be cool to go to the moon. And my second answer was Ernest Shackleton.
Okay.
and so my friend was like, wow, you're really picking people who've gone on crazy adventures. I'm like, yeah, I think I like that.
I like it too.
Yeah, so either an astronaut or Antarctic explorer.
I love it. I think there's something freeing in there and willing to go for it, just like going for a 250-mile race over 8 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, I'm so grateful you came in to do this. I've just had a great time doing it.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Appreciate you.
Good to meet you.
Cool. Good to meet you too. Thanks. Cheers. An easy 2 hours, right? I know listening to these long form podcasts is much different than being in the conversations, but 2 hours just breezes by with rad people like Derek when you're in these conversations, you know, when you're having them. And you know, each of these guests has offered me something different to think about and consider, and you know, each person has challenged my own thinking in a different way. But it's conversations that stretch my thinking on what I believe I have a handle on that have the biggest impact on me. Derek made me think about myself as a runner, how we can hold other men accountable, and made me feel not alone in the thought that it'd be nice to be pursued as a man, which isn't always seen as, you know, manly or whatever. But so that's what I meant, Derek, when I said that this was one of my favorite conversations, because you pushed me to expand my thinking. You prodded, you held a space for me to share, and I felt safe in doing so. And that's what made this conversation special for me. And I hope that kind of came through to everyone else. So thank you for that. Thank you for being open, when you came in here. Thank you for being emotional when talking about your running. That was really special for me. I think for everyone else, I think this is the type of communication that we could all benefit from practicing somehow, some way, you know, just holding a space for people, you know, exploring ideas with people when they want to talk, and without judgment. And even if you disagree, just talking with people, listening, just listen. So Derek, when I said that this is one of my favorite conversations, that's what I meant, sir. So thanks for joining. Really looking forward to doing it again, and looking forward to hanging out outside of this. So all right, hope you all enjoyed that. I'll have another one for you next week. But until then, love you all, and we'll chat soon. All right. Be present, stay open, much love.
And so there came a point in our evolution when we didn't guide life by distrusting our instincts, and had to think about it, and had to purposely arrange and discipline and push our lives around in accordance with foresight and words and systems of symbols, accountancy, calculation, and so on. And then we worry. Once you start thinking about things, you worry as to whether you've thought enough. To see when you're over there, you'll feel it all around. Let it all come through. Our love for you. There ain't a thing that will frighten you. This peace of mind.
Say goodbye.